So we walked over to the hospital, went to the ER, and I told her what was going on. I went to speak to the nurse. She said, "Well, let me just take your blood sugar." So I'm like, "Okay."
Yeah.
So she took the first prick, and it came up 585.
No
And she looked,
fucking way.
yeah, 585. So she's like, "Mr. Shadwick, your blood sugar is 585." She said, "That's not normal." I said, "What's normal?" She said, "120." She said, "Well, let's do some extra blood work." When they did the extra blood work, my blood sugar came back again. You know what the number was?
Was it higher?
787.
You could have been in a coma.
That's why they looked at me. They said, "Mr. Shadwick, are you okay?" I'm like, "I'm fine." They said, "Your blood sugar is 787." I'm like, "Okay." And they looked at me like, "How are you not in a coma? How are you cognizant? How are you not passing out?" I'm like,
Yeah, how'd you walk over here? Like,
Hey, it's Mel. Before we dive in, just a quick note. This podcast is for educational and informational purposes only. The insights shared by our guests are not a substitute for medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always consult with your healthcare provider before making changes to your diet, exercise, or lifestyle. Now let's get to the show.
All righty. Welcome to our Sleep Life podcast. I'm your host, Mel. And I got my guy with me. I got Arthur. He is My Purpose Fit on Instagram. And I'm sure you're on TikTok, right, too?
Yes, but Instagram is like the main one.
Right. You know what? I love you, TikTok, but it is a bitch over there.
It is. I don't understand. I get no love. I get all my love on IG.
Right? I don't get any love either. I get it. Like, I get maybe 100 views. I'm like, whatever.
Exactly.
I'm like, screw this. So, but you guys know, I love patient stories. I like getting them out there. I like to know all the new stuff that happens, all the stuff that they're going through. So, Arthur, let's do it, man. When did your journey start? Because everyone knows I came out of my mom as a big baby. So, it started right when I was conceived.
Well, listen, I grew up morbidly obese most of my life. I come from a morbidly obese family. So I can show you pictures of my great-great-grandmother, literally. And, you know, we always use this because we big boned it, you know, in our family. And so that was just how we are. You know, we grew up in the South. My grandmother came up north in the late 50s, early 60s. She started her family up here. My mom was born up here in New York City. And so we started our life. And so from a young child, I could show you pictures back of just me at 5 and 6 years old. I was always the husky type, always the chunky type. That was just my life growing up. You know, we like to eat. Yeah, that was my makeup. We like to eat, you know, and stuff. People always thought I would go into sports growing up because they said, "Oh, you could be a great, you know, football player." That was just, I wasn't interested in sports. I'm still not a sports person to this day. I'm
really?
Not, sorry. Not, no, I'm more of a bookworm. Yeah. People say, "Oh, I thought you'd go into football." No, I just was not into sports. I was just, I guess I was a nerd. I guess that's what
it's
I was.
Okay. But guys, I've met Arthur in person and he's a tall guy. So like, I was like, "Oh, you could be totally like a defensive lineman."
Yeah. All
you
my life I've been told that.
My kid played football for 6 years, so I'm a sports mom. So that's why I'm like, you totally could have been. But you know what? You used your brain for good. No CTE for you. You know, so that's always a plus. So as a kid, you weren't doing the sports. You were the bookworm.
Bookworm. Just, you know, video games, different things like that. And so that's what I kind of focused on. And then by the time I got into like my early teens, and so, you know, I probably was 225, 240, 250. By the time I graduated high school, I was already wearing like a 2XL and I had to probably be close to 300 pounds around that time. And so, you know, again, I didn't see my weight as like a big thing because I say, "Hey, I come from a big family.
Yeah.
We big boned it. You know, I don't really have any health issues or anything that was going on for me at that time." I knew my grandmother dealt with diabetes, hypertension. You know, thank God my mom never dealt with anything like that. And so I'm like, "Well, I'm cool. I'm good. You know, I like to eat, you know." And, you know, if you come from a family like mine's, we like to eat. I mean, like soul food. I mean, collard greens, the yams, you know, cornbread, rice pudding, I mean, banana pudding, chicken, ribs. I mean, you name it. That was like the Sunday feast. You know, everybody we say they have a hand on them. They had a hand on them. They knew how to cook. And so that was just like that's how we connected as a family. We love to, you know, to eat. And so as I got older, got married at about 24 years old, you know, Alberta. So yeah, that's your girl. And so, you know, when I got married, I was already probably close to about 330 pounds. Then I was about 24 years old. I picked some wedding pics up and stuff so people could kind of see. I actually had to have my tuxedo custom made because I could not find anything to fit me. And so
that's a twofold, right? Because at first you're like, fuck, nothing will fit me. But then you're like, I get a custom suit.
So exactly. So I always looked on the positive side of being big. Like, okay, well, I get custom made clothes. Ain't no one gonna have what I'm wearing because I'm gonna get a custom dress shirt, a custom suit, you know, whatever. But then the other side was like, but your fat butt can't get into that store. You can't go to Macy's because you can't fit that. You outsize big and tall stuff. So it's like you go to order from a catalog, or you're gonna be forced to do something that is custom. And so I did the custom stuff. And so I took pride in that because I could always, you know, I always was into fashion. You know, my mom, you know, dressed us very well growing up. You know, one thing she said to me, she said, listen, she said, you're a big boy, so you got to dress up the part. People expect you because you're overweight to be sloppy. We're not sloppy. She said, we don't do that. And so she said, we could be big. That's one strike against us, but we're going to be neat. You know,
oh my God, like our families are a lot alike with that sense because like, yeah, we were not allowed to look sloppy at all. It was Sunday best every day.
Okay, like, exactly. You know,
it was like, and I tell this to people, like my mom used to slap our stomachs and be like, suck it in, suck it up. No one should be seeing
hold
that belly.
Neck out. Come That's on, right. dude. Come, we take them pictures. Oh come on, suck it.
Yeah,
yes.
My aunt would tell me all the time. She's like, every night, just do this. And she would tell me to lean back and just like, so that way you can never have that turkey neck. And you know what, Aunt Jolynn, I think you did a good job because I listened to you. And after getting to 300 pounds and down, I have a pretty good neck. So,
girl, your neck is snatched. I got the beard hide a little, the extra skin, but we got firm.
That's right. That's right. So, oh my God, I'm so relating right now. This is too funny. All right, keep going.
So, yeah, so. By the time I got married, you know, at the age of 24, we started our life. My Irene and I, you know, we were fine. And, you know, again, I just continued to put on the weight just gradually. It wasn't like I woke up one day, I was like, woo, you're 400 pounds. Just gradually just began to just increase over time. And I just think, you know, just life stress when you're newlywed, you know, you're trying to provide, you know, we both had jobs squared away when we got married and the week of our wedding, both the jobs that we had, both fell through. So here we are. Yeah, I'm dead serious. So here we are a week before we married. We both went on interviews. We got the job. We're going to start. I said, okay, we're getting married September 7th, 2002. Okay, we're going to start our job. We wasn't going on a honeymoon or anything. We was just going to get married, moving to our new apartment. We were moving from New York to New Jersey. We was going to get our life started together. And both our jobs fell through. And so here we are. Nope. So here we are, newlyweds in an apartment. How are we going to pay the rent? What are we going to do? And so I'm scrapping, trying to find odd-end jobs. She was a school teacher. She just graduated from college with a degree, wanted to start her career in education. And so she's substituting. And so we're just trying to make it work. But the stress of all of that, you know, you just go to food. Food has always been my comfort. Food doesn't argue back. Food comforts you, it soothes you, it gives you what you need, it just makes you feel all warm and gooey on inside. And so that's what I resorted to. And so for me, it was just the portion sizes began to get gradually larger and larger. I'll give you an example. We'll go, let's say, go to your local delicatessen and buy a sandwich. Instead of eating one sandwich, I started eating a sandwich and a half. The next day, I was eating two whole 12-inch sandwiches. It was just those things. Yeah. So it was just things that just begin to build up. You go for that second, you know, plate helpings. But then you go next time you've gone for two or three helpings, or you go grocery shopping, you snack on a piece of deli meat. And next thing, half the deli meat is gone because you then went back 20 times to keep on snacking. And so things like that just begin to just gradually just increase in my life because of the stress and just all the pressure on top of. And then on top of that, my wife and I, we started a church, you know, and so I'm a pastor. And so it was like all of that, pastoring now, a new congregation, reaching out to people, trying to be a person of strength, even though I'm inside wondering, how is this going to all work out together? Life is life, and right now, what am I going to do? And so just trying to figure everything out, it was just a toll on me. And so by the time I got to the age of 29 now, I kept feeling funny in my body. I'm like, something's not right. I don't know what's going on. And I just had this insatiable thirst that I couldn't get rid of. And I just kept drinking. I'm like, I'm thirsty. Why am I still thirsty? What's going on? I kept urinating. So I'm trying not to give too much details, but I kept urinating. I'm like,
of the details. Oh, give
I kept pissing. I couldn't stop peeing. I'm like, what's going on? And so I remember one night I was up late. It was a Saturday night. I remember this. And I woke up out of my room. It was probably maybe about 12 midnight. I said, honey, something's wrong. Something's not right. And she's like, what's wrong? I said, I don't know, but something's not right. Something's not right. And so unfortunately, we live literally across the street from the hospital. So we walked over to the hospital, went to the ER, and I told her what was going on. I went to speak to the nurse. She said, well, let me just take your blood sugar. So I'm like, okay. So she took the first prick and it came up 585.
No fucking way.
Yeah, 585. So she's like, Mr. Chadwick, your blood sugar is 585. She said, that's not normal. I said, what's normal? She said, 120. She said, well, let's do some extra blood work. When they did the extra blood work, my blood sugar came back again. You know what the number was?
Higher?
Sad.
You could have been in a coma.
That's why they looked at me. They said, Mr. Chadwick, are you okay? I'm like, I'm fine. They said, your blood sugar is 787. I'm like, okay. And they looked at me like, how are you not in a coma? How are you cognizant? How are you not passing out? I'm like,
yeah. How'd you walk over here? Like,
I said, God, shit. I guess I work for the big man upstairs. He hooked me up. I don't know. I have no clue. But they were making it so big. I was like, what, should I be falling out? Like, what's going on? But that was like the first wake up call for me. After that, I had to go on diabetic medication.
Yeah.
I had to take, you know, different two, three different pills. I was, you know, even having side effects with that. But that still wasn't enough to kind of like wake me up to say, okay, Arthur, it's time to change. Like, I wanted to change. I had a desire to do it. But every time was a failed attempt. And I would never get to a place where I really saw the results that I wanted to see. Moving forward, 5 years later, at the age of 35, my wife threw me a surprise 35th birthday party. My birthday is actually Christmas Day. So we had a Christmas party, so she tricked me. I was a Christmas baby. And no, guys, I never got cheated on my birthday. I always got two gifts because everybody asked me, you always must have got cheated on your birthday. No, I never got cheated on my birthday. I still get two gifts to this day. Good. So I was good with that. Good. And so my wife did a 35th birthday party for me, and she took a picture of me, and I have the picture. I'll share it with you. And I have the picture of me, and she said, listen, you could do anything you want to do with your life. You know, you could make a shift. You could make a change. And I said, well, maybe I'll do something, you know, with my life. Maybe I'll make a change. I didn't know what that change actually meant. But by time, so that year, I ran from the doctor. When I got diagnosed with diabetes, I kind of stayed from the doctor. I was not going regularly. As a man, you know, men guys, we don't like to go to the doctor all the time.
No,
especially when you hear Mr. Chadwick, you know you gotta lose weight. Mr. Chadwick, you know you gotta keep your sugar. And I mean, I was running like my glucose levels were like 300 or something. That was normal. I woke up in the morning, taking medication, 250, 300 in the morning. And I went like that for years. I didn't know I was hurting myself. I had no clue. Yeah. It was just a shame, a fear.
So for people that are listening,
mm-hmm.
Okay, your blood sugar is supposed to be around 120.
120.
At all times.
At all times.
It's going to go up and down a little bit, right, but whatever. Right, and then in the morning time, it's supposed to be like its lowest.
Yeah, under 100 normally.
So the
fact
that you're waking up in the 220s to 300s is wild.
Yeah.
And you're taking a med. So it's like, obviously the meds are helping in some form of fashion because you would have been up in like 600, you know, 700s, but still, like, that's a big deal. Do we know, I don't know off the top of my head, but what does that mean in your blood system? Does that mean that like you have that amount of sugar in your system? Like, how does that work exactly?
Yeah. So that means you have that amount of sugar in your system. And for me, I was damaging my liver, did not know it. So I had fatty liver disease. It was damaging. I had no clue. So when they looked at my liver, it's like, your liver is looking like you're an alcoholic. I'm like, but I don't drink. I don't do anything. But it said, but the sugar in your system is damaging your liver. And if you're not careful, you know, and I wound up getting NASH, because it's like, if you're not careful, you're going to have non-alcoholic, you know, fatty liver disease. Like you're going to jack yourself up. And I did not know I was hurting myself by running away from that. And so I didn't find out, and I'm going to tell you in a few moments, but I didn't find out about the liver thing until I got, you know, I got a little bit older. At 35, I said, let me get me a scale. At least, you know, let me, because again, I didn't want to step on a scale. I didn't want to go to a doctor. You know, I just went to get my little prescription. I did my little blood work every now and then just to keep my doctor off my case. But for me, the medication was more like it was soothing me, but it wasn't. It was soothing me just for me to maintain the lifestyle that I was maintaining. And I wasn't, you know, we're supposed to take medication so we could make the diet adjustments and stuff, lifestyle adjustments so that it can help us. It just was just my way to keep on eating and doing the things that I wasn't trying to really change. I had the desire to, but desire doesn't mean anything if you're not trying to practice. And so that's what I was doing. And so by the time I got to 35, I got a scale. I stepped on the scale and the scale went up to 550 pounds. And when I stepped on it, it said error.
Shit, no.
So to this day, Mel, I don't know what my highest weight was. I don't know. I don't know what my highest weight. I'm pretty sure I was close to 600 pounds.
Right, right.
I'm pretty sure. But I don't know what my highest weight was. I have no clue. I could have been over 600. I have no clue.
Yeah.
My waist was a size 72, 74. Okay. My suit jacket was a size 74.
Damn.
To give you an idea of what size I was wearing, my foot was a size 13. And so that was my life. That's how I lived. And so, you know, I didn't have any really big adverse health issues besides the diabetes. Later on, you know, I had knee joint issues. Obviously, if you're carrying 500 plus pounds, you're going to have knee issues. But again, it wasn't enough to like, Arthur, wake up. Like, if you don't do anything, you're going to die. That was never like my type of thing. You know, I'm focusing on serving people as a pastor, helping people on the faith journey, life coaching, helping them. But yet I wasn't practicing what I was preaching. So I was just kind of just, well, I'm trying to help them. And sometimes we can be so focused on everybody else that we neglect ourselves. And
all
I was
the time.
Like I want to help you save this person, save the world, save this. But inside I'm dying. And that was me. I was just killing myself softly, like literally just wasting away. And during that time, my wife and I was trying to conceive. And so we went through a whole 16 years since we got married, time of infertility. And then, in 2016, actually 10 years ago now, my wife, we dealt with a miscarriage a few years before. And then by time, you know, 2016, we got pregnant again. So I'm like, we're doing great. We made it through the first trimester. Everything was looking great. And I was like, yes, 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 yes. And unfortunately, at 22 weeks, my wife went into labor, delivered our son Asher, and he didn't make it. And so that was a tremendous, you know, loss for us. It happened June 1st. Actually, become up his anniversary now. He would have been 10 years old June 1st. And so that was kind of like, okay, what's going on here? And that was like a devastating moment. And I was kind of using that moment to feel kind of my change or whatever. But I was so, I think, trying to push through and make sure my wife was okay going through this situation, you know, encouraging everybody else, because, you know, when you're a pastor like I am, you know, people are watching you from afar and they're watching you up close and personal. So how you respond, people are watching like, okay, is he going to fall apart? Is he going to quit? Is he going to curse God? Like, what's going on? Like, what's going to happen?
Yeah,
and so
they want your reaction. They want
to
know.
And so they're like looking. And so I'm just like, okay, I have to, boy, you got to hold it together. As a man, you got to hold it together, because like, you don't got time to really respond. You have to act and not react in those type of moments. And so I went through that moment of just acting, just pushing us through, getting us through. But again, that was taking a toll on my body. I was, again, trying to help everybody else, family, wife included, but I was neglecting myself, you know.
Through and through, you were like 100%.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
going through these big traumas like that, like you said, the food has never bad-mouthed us, has never made us feel like shit. So I'm sure that you were probably coping with food.
You better believe it. Oh, right? Man. Oh, like, my God. Yeah. That absolutely.
Because I know I would. Like, once you said what happened, instant chills, and I was like, yeah, I would totally go to food.
Yeah.
I wouldn't even think twice. I'd be like, all right, give me some curly fries from Arby's. I need some ranch.
Okay.
And I need my burrito from Victor Rica.
It was Wendy's. It was Wendy's. It was McDonald's dollar menu. It was just, you know, just eating all sorts of just different things. We have a gas station. I don't know if you have that. It's a place called Wawa. The Wawa has like a deli, has soups and stuff. And so, listen, that would be my go-to, my stop. That would be my pre-dinner before I go to dinner. I say, honey, what you cook for dinner? Oh, I made some chicken. Oh, I don't want no chicken. You know what? Let me stop by Wawa, get me a sandwich, eat that, then go home and eat her dinner. So it was like stuff like that. And yep. I would hide, and it got bad, Mel. I would hide while I would eat. So she would even know that I stopped somewhere. So I go to Wendy's and I'll make sure I got the car, throw out the wrappers and stuff like that, then drive home. Okay, honey, what's for dinner? Because that's how much deception that I was in, trying to just maintain for everybody else, but yet inside I was killing myself.
You're just dying inside.
Yeah.
Literally, like, you're just, I've done this myself, and this, like, the only reason why I can relate to you is because, like, I would just give it to everyone else and make sure everybody was fine. And then at home at nighttime, I'm just crippling.
Yeah.
And I'm eating.
An empty cup, because you didn't pour it out to everybody.
Yep. Gave it to everybody else.
Yeah.
And I've done what you've done. I've gone and got it was mozzarella sticks for me. Eric, my ex-husband, great fucking cook. I will never diss on his cooking. It was amazing. And that's what got me pretty big for a while. So he knows what he did. He knows. But do the same, because he was the cook. So I would be like, hey, what's for dinner? And when he would have spaghetti, it's not that I didn't like his spaghetti. I just really don't care for red sauce. Mm-hmm. So anytime I heard that, I'm like, we're having mozzarella sticks. That's what happened in my head. Mm-hmm. So I would go to Arby's or Sonic, get me my mozzarella sticks, eat that on the way home. And then he had no idea.
She had no idea. I'll be at McDonald's. Oh, honey, I got to stop and get some gas. I'll get some gas. But I'm munching before I get home. You know, I'm munching and doing that. But again, I did not realize those were coping mechanisms, because there were things that were deeper happening on the inside of me that I was not dealing with. And so for me, it was kind of like, okay, I didn't realize that that was really crying out for help and not really dealing with the issues and the fears and the grief and the pain and all those different things that I was going through on the inside. And here I am, as a man of faith, as a Christian, as a pastor, you know, dealing with these things. And it's just like, listen, it's like, we're all human.
So
we all
do it. So
yeah. And so it's just like, sometimes, you know, we want to be the strong man, but sometimes you got to take off the armor. Sometimes you got to expose yourself. You got to be real. You got to be vulnerable so you can really deal with the things on the inside of you.
Yeah. And you can do that at home with your wife and family. Like, that's the one thing people forget. Like, you don't have to do that on a big scale. You can be very vulnerable in just a one-to-one person setting. It doesn't have to be anything more than that. It's whatever you're comfortable with, because I've had to unleash a bunch of griefs that I've never processed. So, and that was, I did too. I was just feeding it. I was just feeding it, literally eating and feeding the grief and not actually handling it. So it's like, I feel you, like, it's so hard. So when did the switch happen? Because because you are not that man anymore.
Thank God I'm not that man anymore.
You're not.
So in 2019, my wife and I, we bought our first house together, and we were excited. We were renters for about 15, 16 years. And so we bought our first house together, and then we found out that she was pregnant. And I was like, okay. And she just turned 40 that September, and I turned 40 that Christmas, that year in 2019. I said, okay. I'm like, pregnant, well, 2018, going to 2019. And so I was like, okay. So I think for me, it was kind of like, well, let's see where this leads, you know, knowing our history, what's going on, you know, yeah. that type of thing. And, you know, it was a rough pregnancy. I mean, my wife literally spends 3 months in the hospital. Her last trimester, she spent in the hospital. Literally, I lived in the hospital with her. So yeah. from Sunday, I will go to work on Sunday, preach on Sunday, lead the church on Sunday, go right to the hospital, stay there till Friday, go home on the weekends, shower up, clean up, go to church on Sunday, or come back to the hospital. And I did that for 3 months straight, you know. And so, yeah. And she was just she was just bedridden. During that time, we had multiple scares. She went into preterm labor a couple of times. Thank God they were able to kind of calm everything down and it happened. For the fact that my daughter went full term is a miracle, because they kept saying from the get-go, we don't know how long she's going to, you know, hold on to. They had to actually induce my wife's labor and take her through a C-section to get my daughter out, because she literally went to the full term.
She's like, I ain't going.
Exactly. And that's my daughter today. Strong and courageous. That's her today, for real. So July 9th, 2019, my daughter was born. Okay, she was 10:57 a.m. And so when I laid my eyes on my daughter, I knew at that point, Arthur Chadwick, if you do not make a change in your life, this little girl that you're holding in your hands, and I have a picture of it, me looking at her, if you don't make a change, you're not going to be alive to walk down the aisle one day. You're not going to be around. You're not. And I just knew, like, Arthur, like, okay, she's here. You prayed for this blessing of this child. Your prayers have been answered. This is a wonderful, precious gift. Some people never get to experience what you're experiencing. What are you going to do with this gift that you've been given? What are you going to do to be around, to give this girl everything that she deserves so she can have the best life possible? And for me, I knew that I had to really make a change. I didn't know at that time what that change meant. I knew I had to lose weight, but I didn't know what was going to be the route for me to lose, you know, the weight. But I knew at that moment, I have to make a change.
It's time.
I remember having a conversation with Amber in the hospital. I said, listen, honey, I said, I'm considering some type of procedure or something to help me, whether it's, you know, a pill or whatever. I mean, they didn't have GLP-1 drugs back then. But I'm just like, I need some type of help. And she said, you know, and my wife said, she, I've talked with her about the surgery thing maybe a couple times. My sister, God bless you, shout out to Tiffany. She had the surgery, you know, a couple years before I did. And she was the first one in the family to have it. And everybody was like, don't do it. But she needed to do it because she was a mom of two young kids at the time. And her life has transformed. And she's kept the weight off. It's been over a decade now that she is killing it. She is doing wonderful.
Yeah.
And so she was
go
like,
Tiffany.
Yes, go Tiff. And so she was like the only like person that I knew up close and personal that went through a bariatric procedure. But again, I didn't know if that was for me, you know, or not, you know, that type of thing. The balloon was the big thing back then. You put the balloon in your system. They had the, what was the thing where they put the little, the belt? The lap band and stuff like that. And so I said, well, maybe something like that. I don't know. So I was just kind of doing my research. I told my wife, I said, okay, once you get out the hospital, we get, you know, settled with our daughter, I'll kind of figure out what the next step is for me. You know, her thing was, do you feel like you have exhausted every other area to lose weight that you have to go down this route? And, you know, I told her, I said, honey, how many gym memberships have failed? How much time have we tried? You know, I have videos. You can see the pictures of me going to the gym. Just, I'm going to do it this time. And it just didn't happen. I said, I tried everything. You know, I said, and I just felt like I was at a place where it's like, I need to make a change. I need to make a drastic change. And I need to make a change as quickly as possible because I knew time was ticking against me.
Yeah, and so, you have a newborn and you want to be there for all the things. Like, that is
exactly
super important. And like, children really help us put things into perspective.
Exactly.
So they really do.
Yes, yes. Absolutely. My daughter's knocking on the door now. Hold on 1 second.
Put your charger on too, by the way.
Okay.
It notified me that you're at 20%.
Okay. Will do.
Okay.
You want to say hi real quick? Say hi. Thank you. Hey. Okay, I'm coming. Let me get my charger. All right.
Okay.
All right.
I'll be right here. It's all good. Okay, so now we're at the point where your baby is here and you're making decisions. You're doing research. So, I understand why you're like, I've done all the things. Like the gym is like, we've gone to so many different memberships. We've had so many different things. And even my mom yesterday, God bless their heart sometimes. Like she 62 years old, right? She just got out of the hospital 2 weeks ago for kidney issues. And she's just like, she's like, how do you think I should lose weight? And I was like, well, mom, we just need to get you eating healthier, drink, you know, get more water in your system and, you know, do that first. And she's like, okay. And I was like, but I do think you should probably talk about a GLP-1 or maybe we can do surgery. And she's like, you don't think I could do anything else besides like those two things? I go, well, mom, yeah, because she said natural. And I was like, mom.
Right. And that was my thing, natural. Like, I want to do natural, you know, and stuff like that. And I feel like, look, if people want to go that route to start their journey, like anything you do is going to be a tool, you know? And I know some people's like, oh, if you take the GLP-1 or if you have the surgery, it's the easy way out. And I give the example of this. I said, listen, I said, if a house is on fire and it's burning, I don't care if you jump out the window, if you come through the front door, if you walk down the stairs, or if someone rescues you with the ladder and the hose. The point is that you got the house. Yeah. That's to get free. So however you use to start your journey, whether it's a GLP-1, whether it's just walking. I mean, I lost my first 40 pounds without any type of medication or anything. Like, I walked. I just walked. I wasn't doing any weight training. I walked. I lost 40 pounds. And that's how I started my journey. So, like,
it could be as simple as that. It really, really can. And I told my mom, I was like, mom, you got to think you're 60. I was just straight with her. I was like, I love you, but you're 62 years old. You've gone through menopause. You have to have some sort of intervention at this point. Like, there's just no ifs, ands, or buts about it. And you have to really think about your age and what health concerns do you have now and what you don't want to have later. What's the family history? And you know what? God put these fucking doctors on this earth to make sure we're okay, right? So I'm like, natural is natural, however you want to spin it. Because to me, it's still natural.
Right.
So I'm like, it's still a human being going inside me and fixing things and helping me and then talking to me about how to keep going. Right.
Exactly. So, and my thing, and it all boils down to, listen, you still got to, no matter what route you take, you got to eat right.
Yep.
You still got to exercise. You still got to do all the different things. So no matter how you jumpstart it, to maintain it, we all got to do the same thing.
Yes.
You got to do the same thing. So it's like so whether I had it or I didn't have it, you do. Guess what? You got to eat right. You got to get your macros. You got to get your rest. You got to get your movement. You still got to do all those things to help you to maintain your journey. And that's why I focus on all my clients with. Some are bariatric, some are not bariatric. Some take GLP-1. Some believe it. Some don't. Some are against it. Whatever. I don't care. You all have to do the same thing if you're going to stay healthy. Yep. And that's the key.
The core will never change. Protein, water, movement, and sleep. My goodness, people, take your vitamins as
Take your vitamins, take and your supplements, all those things. Yeah.
I throw in the last one. I call it the six pillars, and the last one is just therapy. If you want therapy, I'm a big advocate for therapy. Mm-hmm. I go every Thursday.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That's so important. So,
it really is.
So when my daughter was born, I was looking at different routes to kind of help me start my journey. And so I went to a bariatric doctor. And again, I wasn't looking to have surgery. I was just exploring my options. I was looking more at the balloon. And, you know, thank God for Dr. Weber. She was nice. And she said, Arthur, she said, the type of weight that you have to lose, that balloon is not going to work for you, sir. If you have to lose between 50 and 70 pounds, she said, you need to lose over 200 pounds, sir. And so I'm just like, you know, it was, as she said, you know, and I said, okay, my BMI at that time, when I sat down and spoke with her, I think I was at 67, 68 BMI,
Damn,
you know? Okay. And so, you know, so I lost some weight, I was under 550, but I was still like 520 pounds, 518 pounds when I started. And so even with that, you know, I had to really kind of figure out like what was going to be my plan. And so, you know, we looked at our options and I kind of felt like having the gastric sleeve was the route for me. My sister had had the surgery a number of years before, you know, at that time. And so I'm like, well, maybe this is the route for me. I never had any type of surgery in my life done before. Really? And so it was just, so it was just something that, you know, I said, let me be open to it. Let me just see what happens, you know, with this, you know, in my life. And so in August of 2021, I had gastric sleeve surgery. And for me, it was a tool. And I tell people, these are all tools. You can jack yourself up with the tool, or you can use the tool to jumpstart you, to help you to live the better life that you want, you know, because I know many people who've had any type of surgery or GLP-1 and they put the weight back on. And my thing is like, you didn't utilize the tool. And I know for me, I had to use this as a tool. This was giving me the jumpstart that I needed to become a better version of myself. Now, mind you, this is 2021. We are just a year out from the pandemic.
I want to say,
People were dropping. And when I was, where I'm from in New Jersey, I was at the heart of when the pandemic hit the country.
Yeah.
If you remember, it was started in the Bronx in a plant, and then it came to New Jersey. I was located right in New Jersey. Literally, my church was up the block from the hospital where there were morgue trucks lined on out because the morgue was too full. They had meat trucks with bodies stacked. So I'm literally watching people die all around me. And here I am with diabetes, over 500 pounds, with a newborn walking around the house wondering, what the heck am I going to do?
Yeah.
And so for me, it was like a critical go moment. Like, Arthur, you got to do something. Like, this is critical. You don't know what's going on, you know, and anything. And thank God I never got COVID during that time. I got COVID after I lost the weight. And I told my wife, I said, if I got COVID before, I said, I don't think I would have made it. I said,
yeah,
I don't think I would have been one of those monk trucks. I said, you would have been a widow. Nick would have been fatherless. I said, I really believe that. And I said, you know, my health would not have been able to keep up with what was happening, you know, during that time.
And that was a very scary time for us obese people.
Yeah.
Because,
yeah,
like, it was, yeah, actually something real that could get us.
Yes.
And it was in your face. It wasn't like,
yeah,
maybe, you know, people, no, that are overweight might,
no,
get this.
I knew,
no,
people who dropped dead, especially being African-American. It hit our community very hard.
Yeah.
And so, you know, not getting the proper medical care that we need, people dropping like flies. And so for me, it was kind of like, Arthur, you got to do something. This is it. This is your defining moment. You got to do something. And so all those things fueled me to go down that route and to explore that tool that I felt was the best route. Listen, to each his own. But this is my journey. This is my story.
That's right.
And so I felt like that was what was best for me. And I have no regrets. I'm not ashamed of it. I'll tell people in a minute. That's the route that I took. And listen, it's my story. It's my life.
That's right. That's right. And where did you get your surgery done?
So New York Bariatric Groups. New York Bariatric is huge in the New York City area. And so I went to New York Bariatric Group. I had wonderful staff there. I'm still connected with them to this day. And so it was a great experience from day one. They were, you know, just walked me through everything that I needed, getting all my clearances. It was there that I found out I had sleep apnea because I had to do a sleep study. It said, Mr. Chadwick, you stop breathing 30 times for your sleep study. I advise you not to sleep on your back because you might not wake up.
Fuck.
So, yeah. So it was during that time that I found I had fatty liver disease. You know, during that time, because again, I avoided going to the doctor.
Mm-hmm.
I, you know, I'm just like, well, I know that diabetes. I thought I had high blood pressure. It's like, oh no, your blood pressure. When I went to have my endoscopy done, my blood pressure jumped so much while they would have me under sedation that they had to give me medication, put the blood pressure back in check. And when I woke up, the lady's like, you need to go to your primary care physician Monday because your blood pressure is out of whack, sir.
Okay.
And I was just like, it is? She's like, yes. She said, don't you have these experiences, these spirits? I was like, I do. She said, that's high blood pressure. Again, avoidance, you know, being a stubborn old man, you know, you, I'm all right. You know, I will be okay. But dealing with the symptoms of these things, but not really facing what was really happening and going on the inside of me. And so going through that process of having surgery awakened me to other issues and things that I need to deal with in my body. And so I'm grateful that I went that route, because for me, it brought enlightenment to help me to understand what was really happening, you know, in my body, you know.
Yeah, because like, yeah, any of those went untreated for too long, Arthur,
there'll be no Arthur here today.
You know, and I firmly believe you're here for a reason. So,
Thank you.
You've been through a lot, and there's been times where there should not be an Arthur, and you've still been here and pushed through. And I'm just happy that you are here, because, like, you have shined so much light, like, on the community, on your community, and what you do. And it's not easy to be in this. I mean, you can tell me if I'm wrong or not, but I would imagine it's not easy being a pastor in this world that where you're obese.
No.
And trying to take care of everybody,
right.
You know, like, that has to be hard.
Oh, it definitely is a struggle. And I think, you know, particularly, you know, the Black community, we see being the big pastor, the obese pastor, is kind of like, you know, a norm. Because, you know, when you grow up in the church, all the different foods, everything feeds you. And so, you know, the term gluttony, you know, we've become gluttonous. You know, we focus on the other quote unquote sins, but we don't realize that when we're eating all these different things and no really healthy options, these things just feed us, and we don't realize we play into a persona, into a system that does not, you know, support healthy living. And so for me, you know, just being a pastor trying to do all those different things, it definitely was a challenge. When I started my journey in 2021, you know, I had to tell people, listen, I'm eating different, you know, don't be offended. I'm not going to take your potluck meal. Thank you so much. I'm grateful. I'll give it to somebody else who has a need, but I'm not doing that. But we had, you know, functions. No, I don't want a slice of cake. I'll just have some fresh fruit, you know, and I had to kind of make that conscious decision and be more verbal about my journey and not being ashamed of where, you know, I want it to be, you know, and stuff.
Because people get real offended if you don't eat their food. You know,
you better eat their food, because something wrong with you.
I know. That's what I'm saying, because I have family, like a lot of my family that people don't know, because I don't share everybody, is like,
right.
I come from a family of Filipinos and Black people. And so, like, y'alls can eat, y'alls can cook, like,
okay.
And oh my God, if I told my Aunt Nene that I wasn't going to eat her food, I felt like she was going to kill me.
Listen, you're going to die.
Right? And she lived in this house with me for 2.5 years, and we love each other to death, but she knows that she was a part of my regain, because it's in the house now. Like, I changed my whole life to where I didn't bring it in. That was the rule. Like, if you wanted it, you had to go out and get it, and
get
you had
it.
To be with people to get it.
It
was never just here. And with Aunt Nene and the five, because I ended up living with, it was me, my kid, and five of my family members.
Mm-hmm.
And she cooked for all of us, and she would be mad if you didn't eat. She would be like, when was the last time you ate? I need to make sure you're eating. Like, it was like that all the time. So, like, I had to tell her, like, hey, like, I love your cooking, but you got to keep the sweets in your room. Like, can you keep them out of sight?
Yes.
Because, like,
if
I see it, I'm like a monster.
Yeah. You're going to be drawn right to it. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And so she did that for a while. And then I realized garlic bread was still an issue for me.
Ooh, garlic bread. My goodness.
And she would let it bake to where, like, the butter just gets in it, you know? And then she put that broiler on. And so.
Get that crisp on it. Oh, I didn't jump out.
I know. And so when you would take, if I took a bite, I made a sex noise once. And I was like, this is probably a problem.
Yeah, I think so. That's addiction.
Right? Like, this is a problem. So, like, I just, like, hey, let's just not, like, because I travel. You know I travel. So, I'm like, hey, make this shit when I'm not at the house.
Why? Why I'm not at there?
And she's like, that's a great idea. And I was like, yeah, just make the garlic.
When I'm away, you can have fun. When I come home, let's keep it clean. Let's keep it pure. Yeah.
Exactly. So when I went to Toronto last year, she had so much fun cooking. You know,
I bet she did. She said, she's not around. Bring it all out.
That's right. That's right. So I get it, because I know how hard it is to be like, hey, it's not your food I don't like.
Mm-hmm.
It's just I can't eat that food anymore. And I'm not saying that it's bad for you either, because then it goes that way. Like, well, then do you think I shouldn't eat it? That's not what I said.
No, it's like, my journey. And like I explained to people, I said, listen, it's my journey. It's my choice. It's where I am. You don't have to be where I am. And I think, you know, in the beginning, when I started my journey, especially, you know, after I had the surgery, started losing the weight, you want to bring everybody with you. But you have to realize that everyone can't go with you. Everyone is not in the same shoes that you're in. And so it's like, you have to keep going. And as a pastor, it's like, you know, I want to meet the whole church. Like, come on, everybody, let's do this together. Like, come on. It's like, no, you go ahead, pastor. You go ahead, sir. You go ahead, Arthur. You go ahead and do it. They'll cheer you on, but it's not their burden to do that. And I had to be okay with that. And say, you know what? I realized everyone's not going to go with me. Everyone, look, people try to tag me along for years before I made my decisions. Like, you will have your own eureka moment, your own epiphany, your own you know, awakening, but everyone's different. So you can, you know, you can help people, you can inspire people. That's what I long to do. But it was my own personal journey. And it's like that to this day. My daughter, you know, was what was a catalyst to launch it, but ultimately it's my journey. It's what I have to do. Yeah.
And you had to do that research, and you actually had to have those hard conversations with people. Yeah. And be really open because of what you do for a living and what you do on your day to day to help people.
Yeah.
You actually had to be like, I was very quiet. So it was like, you know, you had to be open for it to work. And I was more of a recluse because I was just so scared of everybody's opinion and what they would say. Because it was always like, even prior to surgery, it was there was always a comment about my food or what I was wearing or how I looked that day or. So it's like, I didn't want to have more comments. So I was just so I just took it, you know, immediate family, and then just only a bubble of friends knew for 4 years. That's how I rolled. So it was, literally until the podcast that I opened up to everyone.
Yeah. Wow. I wish it could have been that way, but because I was a public figure. Yeah. People are like, okay, is he dying? He's got cancer. He's losing a lot of weight. He's losing fast. What's going on? What's happening and stuff? And so I was forced to, hey, guys, I'm on my journey. This is it. This is what I'm going through. This is what I'm experiencing. I'm doing this for me and for my family. And so that was kind of like, you know, my focus. And again, I've always received such love and support from my community, you know. And so it was just, you know, a wonderful experience. And, you know, I'm grateful for my wife because, you know, there's some people, you know, who are married and they go through this journey and they don't get the support of their spouse. They don't get the support of their family. And so my wife was supportive and still is supportive to this day of just every decision that I've made to become a better version, you know, of myself. And, you know, I always try to encourage people. I say, you know, listen, you know, make sure you support those who are on their journey because you don't know what the struggle is like. You don't know what they're facing, what they're going through. So they need that support to help them.
They do. Know? They do. And I'm so happy that you've had that support around you, because you're right. And I'm sure you've coached people that have had to deal with the other person in the household not helping, or friends being jerks. And now we're not friends anymore because
I've seen people try to sabotage. I've dealt with couples who the wife, you know, was the it of the relationship. And now the husband who no one paid, now he lost the weight. And now everybody's looking at the husband, not looking at her. And so she's making his quote unquote favorite meal all the time to try to. And I'm just like, wow. He's like, she's trying to sabotage me. I'm just like, wow. You know,
she might not know that she is, but she is.
Right. Yeah. Right. Right.
That's what I have learned over this last 11 years is that like people do those things, but they also, some of them aren't aware.
No, they're not. They're not.
Everybody's a mastermind manipulator behind the scenes. They're just right. They just think, oh, well, you know what? Like, I think he should just start eating this shit again.
Right. But I'll make him. Yeah.
And my husband was like that too. He was because he was a cook. So, you know, and he had to adjust all these different things when we were, and it was kind of cool to have someone that like could, and he was up for the challenge. He was just like, he's like, oh, this is just kind of like a fun game to be like, all right, what can I pair together today? But once that novelty wore off though, you know, fast food was coming in the house again.
Yeah.
And he knows I'm literally a cookie monster, and like crumble was coming in all the time. And I wasn't even ordering it. It was just I would come home from work and there's these four.
There is looking at you
cookies.
Saying, hi, Mel.
Yeah.
Come eat me.
And he would always get me my favorite one. And it's literally simple. I'm just a chocolate chip girl with a little bit of salt on top.
Okay.
So, and I didn't realize like one, how bad those are. Like, one cookie is like 500 calories. And I had no idea. And I would eat a whole one all the time. That was part of my regain situation. Like, there was a lot of temptation around me.
Yeah.
And so, like, I told him one time, I was like, I feel like you're sabotaging me without realizing it. I go, I need you to go back to the basics. Like, how I need to go back to the basics. Like,
we need to reset.
We got
to
reset this shit, because, like, you're bringing in all the fast food. And it's not just fast food, because before it was fast food that I didn't like.
Right.
You know, it was the McDonald's, it's the Burger King. But now you're bringing in Carl's Jr., you're bringing in Taco Bell, you know. Right. Like, you're hitting
Just slowly going off a cliff. It's just gradually just going the wrong way. Yeah.
Yep. And so we did have to reset. But you have to communicate with your partner.
Yes. Like,
that's communication is the key. Living with you, you have to talk to them.
You have to let them know. And I had to let, and one thing I had to let my wife know, I said, listen, I said, I might eat differently. I said, now, if you want to join me on some of this stuff, you can, but I'm not expecting you to do what I'm doing, you know, and stuff like
that. I love that.
You know, and so, you know, but the good thing for me is that she did join me on the journey, you know, and so we've shifted. We eat clean in this house. And I'm so glad that we did it together, because now my daughter eats clean. I don't have to worry about her, you know, eating a whole bunch of chicken nuggets and french fries. She eats her veggies. She, you know, she has a good palate, that she's not just stuck on chicken wings and burgers, you know, cheeseburgers. And so, you know, she's not drinking all the juice and all the other artificial stuff that's out there. But it's because we made that choice together, just for my own journey, and it inspired my wife, but now also my daughter seeing an example of it, and she's saying, okay, I've seen my daddy transform. I've seen, she look at old pictures. She's like, oh, that's fat daddy. I said, huh? She said, no, that's fat daddy. She said, that's not the real daddy. That daddy's not here no more. You the real daddy. That's fat daddy. That's the old daddy. You know, she'll let me know that was fat daddy, but you the real daddy. I said, okay, baby. So she's even is aware of just the transformation, everything that I've gone through.
Which is great, because they need that. They need a real role model. And
they
we
do.
Forget that we are the role model, regardless of wanting to or not. Like, mom and dad are role models. And
they're
so,
looking at us. Our kids are looking at us.
Watching every little thing that we do.
Yeah.
And you can, as they get older, like, I have a 20-year-old. So, like, Dylan's 20. I know, it's wild. Dylan's 20 years old. He's moved out. And he's on his own, doing great. You know, like, it's funny, because he called me, was like, I don't know how to feed myself. And I was like, did I not teach you anything? And he goes, no, you did. It's just like, he goes, all I have is condiments and meat in my fridge. And I was like, well, that sounds like a dude fridge for sure.
Right.
Like, but I was like, all you need to do is just go to the store, man, get a bunch of meat you like and get veggies and some fruit. And he's like,
yeah,
is it really that simple? And I go, it actually really,
it really is that simple.
And he called me an hour later and he's like, I went to Winco and I got myself some steak and I got some chicken and I'm going to make myself some salads. And I was like, there you go.
All right. There you go.
You got this. But it's like, but he saw that all I would do is just, you eat clean now. It's just meat, veggies, and fruit, and then you throw in randomness as you go along, but like, that's the staples. And so now he's down 40 pounds.
Go ahead.
He's working out. Like, he has a new PR. He can bench 215 pounds now.
Oh, now. That's wonderful. Right? That's awesome.
So it's like, guys, remember, they watch you. And
they do.
Your daughter is watching you, and
she is.
And I know she's a tough cookie already and strong as hell. I can't wait to see what she's like when she's 20.
Help me, Lord.
Right? Because she's going to be so strong and probably have like a little mouthy.
Listen, she wants to do bodybuilding competitions now. While I was prepping last year for some of my bodybuilding stuff, she was right there in the mirror. I called her my little coach. She would get her little whistle. Come on, daddy. Show me your muscles. Come on. And I mean, I have pictures of us posing, you know, and she's like, daddy, I want to do bodybuilding. I'm like, girl, you're just 6 years old. She's like, no, daddy. I think I'm going to do a show. I said, okay. But again, they're watching you. You're being the example for them.
So you got to tell everybody, like, one, how much weight have you lost? And then two, I know that you have started your own coaching company and that you've gone, that you are a bodybuilder now. So how did this
Isn't that
all,
crazy?
Did you ever think that you would be a bodybuilder?
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not.
No
Never
way.
In a million Years, never. So I lost over 300 pounds. So when I had the surgery, the weight was coming off. And my grandmother, fortunately, she passed away a month after I had the surgery.
Damn.
And so, you know, my grandma was like my second mom to me. She was my heart. And she passed away. She's 81 years old. And, you know, so I had to deal with that. And not just, you know, as a grandson, but one of the things she asked me to do before she passed was she said, you know, I want you to officiate my funeral, or what we call in our community, homegoing. So I had to literally, I'm literally still have stitch marks from surgery, trying to just gather up. I have to lay my grandma to rest, you know, so I'm going through all of that. And so I hit a stall because it's just everything was going on in my body. And so I'm just like, okay, what's going on? And, you know, again, I was just walking, just doing basic things. Cause you know, when you have the surgery, say just move around, whatever. I wasn't really doing any gym. I didn't have any gym experience. So I wasn't doing any of that. So it was just walking. That's all what I did prior to. That's how I lost the 40 some pounds beforehand. And so that's what I was doing. And I was working. But I hit a stall. And so my doctor was like, well, we're just gonna wait. We're just gonna see what's gonna happen or whatever and stuff like that. And then she's like, well, you know, if you don't move after a few months, then there's another surgery. And I said, hold it. I said, now, you know how much courage it took for me just to do this? I said, I ain't doing no more surgery. Like, this is it. Is it this going to work or it's not going to work? I'm not, absolutely not. And so for me, I'm just like, you know what? I'm going to exhaust every option that I got to make this thing work. So I went and got me a coach. So I went and got me a personal trainer. And I said, listen, I don't know anything about the gym. The reason I stopped going to the gym, because when I was over 550 pounds, I broke the treadmill at the gym. Sorry, 24-hour fitness. I know I owe you a treadmill, but I broke the treadmill at the gym. My wife and I went into the gym. She was going to her aerobics class. I was going to get on the treadmill because the only thing I did at the gym was go to the treadmill. I did no weight trainings because I was just like, you know, if you remember those old commercials from Planet Fitness, I pick things up and put them down. I'm like, I'm not that dude. I'm not doing that. And so I don't know about no weight training. I'm not a muscle head. I'm not doing anything like that. So I'll go on my treadmill, walk for 30 minutes, and then I'm done. That was all that I did. And so I went on the treadmill. The treadmill stopped working. Some smoke. So I said, something not right. I called my wife. She said, I'm in my class. I said, we got to go right now. And so I said, she said, what happened? I was full of shame, just feeling embarrassed. I was like, I ain't going to no gym. So I didn't want anything to do with the gym. When I started my journey in 2021, I went, because the pandemic, gyms were closing left and right. I went and bought a commercial scale. A $5,000 scale. I got a good deal on Facebook Marketplace for like $400. I bought a scale. I bought a treadmill, and I put that in my basement. So that's what I did at home. Wasn't going to any gym. So when this whole thing happened, I hit this storm. I'm like, okay. And you know, my dad was like, you maybe you do it. I said, I'm not doing any more surgeries. Listen, we're gonna make this thing work. So I got a trainer. I started training. He said, Arthur, we're gonna do a body recomposition. By that time, I got down to about 430 pounds.
Nice. That's
what I'm at. And so he's like, we're going to do a body recomp. I said, well, what is that? He said, we're going to focus on cardio and we're going to focus on weight training. And so that's what we did. And for 2.5 years, I worked my butt off. I met with him virtually. We worked out. He gave me a plan. He equipped me, and over 300 pounds. I mean, at one point, my surgeon came back to me. She said, Arthur, the surgery didn't do this. She said, you doing this now. She said, the surgery, the effect of the surgery wore off 6 months ago. She said, you're doing this now. Her thought was, I could get you maybe down to close to 330 pounds. I went to 248 pounds.
Yeah, you did. Yeah.
And so she's like, no, this is not the surgery. She said, that's you. That's your discipline. She said, and then by the time about 2 years out, she's like, most people have some type of regain. You have no regain. She said, you have really shifted your life. And so many people kept asking me, what are you doing? I mean, it was funny because even, you know, New York Bachelor Group invited me to come back to be a mentor to other people getting the surgery. It's like, what are you doing? We want to know what you're doing because you're experiencing such a level of success with this thing. And I'd explain to him, I said, listen, the surgery is just a tool, guys. If this is just your get out of jail free card so you could keep on doing the stuff that you're doing, then you're going to fail. This was either a do or die situation for me. Maybe it's not that serious for you, but this is what it was for me. I had to transition my whole life so I could become a better version of myself. I got tired of just being a dreamer, just thinking about someday, someday. That someday had to be now. That someday had to be today. And so for me, that what was the fuel that helped me to get in alignment for me to do what I'm doing. And so that's kind of like how the coaching came about, because people kept asking like, hey, what are you doing? What did you lose the weight? And people who wasn't even looking at the bariatric surgery, right? Like, what are you doing? Because it's more than just the surgery. Because some people just say, oh, you're just bariatric. You're just this. Like, no, like the same things that I have to do, like we talked about earlier, you have to do the same things too. You got to exercise. You got to have your macro. You got to sleep. You got to drink. You got to do all the different things you have to do. And so I just began to help people. And so that's how my purpose fit kind of just developed, you know, out of that. And that's how that, you know, that came apart. Last year, we all know Rob Raffanen, you know, that's our brother. You know,
Rob's our guy.
Yes, he is. Yes, he is. Yes, he is. And so waiting in vain. And so as I was watching him, he won a contest called Radical Body Transformations and he became first place. And so I was like, wow, that's different. And, you know, I knew, you know, he had, you know, went through his own weight loss procedure. I knew about his podcast, The Waiting Table. I was just really inspired by what he was doing. And so he reached out to me and he said, hey, Arthur, you know, you have an opportunity to kind of share your story with the world. And so for me, I was just kind of just sharing with my community. It wasn't anything I was doing publicly or anything like that. And so he said, you should maybe think about doing RBT. And, you know, James Hergott, who is the founder of RBT, he reached out to me. And so that whole process kind of happened. And I was like, first of all, I'm a pastor. Was a pastor being a bodybuilder? What pastor do you see a bodybuilder? Like, how does that even work? Like, I don't know if I'm going to do anything like that. Like, are you crazy? Like, what? You know, but I just felt like, you know what? I'm up for the challenge.
Yeah.
All my life, I've ran away from certain things, especially like sports and different things. I never had a trophy, never had a medallion, never, you know, maybe for a spelling bee or something, but nothing sports related. You know, so I'm just like, you know, I'm up for the challenge. And for me personally, I wanted to wait till I had some skin removal done. I had a lower body lift done in 2024. And so I said, well, I wanted to wait till maybe I got the rest of my skin and stuff removed from my torso. But I felt like saying, if I could do it with my extra skin and show my transformation with my extra skin, then, you know, I maybe could inspire somebody else to do it, you know, and get rid of the stigma or the shame that goes there, you know, with that. So that's what, you know, I did. And so I started training with Rob, you know, Coach Rob. And so, you know, I lost maybe about 30 more pounds or so. And so I did RBT last June. And I wound up winning my division.
Yeah, you did. It was so cool.
Yeah, I won gold. That was kind of like an eye-opener for me. It was kind of like, that was the thing that kind of just launched me forward to say, okay, maybe I thought it was a one-and-done type of thing. I didn't think it would be anything that I would want to do on a long-term basis. I just thought it was a one-and-done. I had the experience. That's it. I'm going to move on with my life. But it sparked something in me. And so one of my teammates at the time, she was doing summer shredding. And she said, well, you know, summer shredding is coming back to Toronto in 8 weeks. I'm just like, wait a minute. I said, well, summer shredding is big. Like, that's a whole nother level. That's a whole nother level. And so I said, I don't know about no summer shredding. You know, I had some of my other friends, you know, who I follow online was talking about summer shredding. I'm like, well, no, that's like the real bodybuilder type of thing for me. I'm like, okay, RBT is one thing because it's all transformation, but summer shredding, they have a transformation division, but there are other people in other divisions. And I'm just like, I don't know how I'm going to feel about doing that. I don't know if that's going to be for me. And so there was this fear and this trepidation that came upon me. But I was so encouraged by my community. I was like, listen, do it. 8 weeks.
Yeah, try
just try. You already prepped for 6 months for this. So just what's 8 more weeks, Arthur? Just do it. And so
they're not wrong.
Right. It's not long. So I said, okay. I spoke with my wife, the time and work for our vacation time. I said, well, you know what? We're going to make this our family trip and we're going to go for summer shredding. And so we go summer shredding August 9th. And don't forget the day. And we go there. I said, well, hopefully maybe I'll place in the top five, you know, in my category. And, you know, maybe I have opportunity to go the following year to the championship. You know, so that was it. Like, you know, for me, I wasn't looking for anything big. I just wanted to just share my story and inspire other people.
Right.
Long story short, I won first place, you know, for, you know, my division.
Yep.
150 plus pound. Then I won overall transformation male for Canada.
I know. I was so excited. And I was just like,
the shock on my face that you see in the video is real. It is not manufactured. It is a real, just a reaction because I was in total shock. And it was a life-changing moment for me. I remember when I sat down with Simon Goliath and I shared with him my story, he was like, your life would never be the same. And it has never been the same since that moment. And so it really opened me up and gave me such a greater opportunity to share my story and to just even just take what I do as a coach to the next level to inspire so many people. And the love, the support that I've received, you know, has just been through the roof. And, you know, I'm just grateful for that.
Well, and I loved that you, there are a few things. One, that you did it. Yeah. And you did it with your skin.
Yeah.
And I know that sounds weird to people, but like in this world, when you lose that amount of weight, you have just skin hanging from all sorts of.
Still do.
Right? Yeah. We got our arms, right? We got that shit. And it's like to see you be on stage and watching you and having your big smile and you posing and doing what you can tell that you loved what you were doing. And it was just, it's an eye opener. And it made me look at loose skin completely different.
Wow. Like,
and that's why I think people need to go to these things and do these things because it's like, it's just fucking skin.
Yeah.
You know? And it's like, oh my goodness, you can see all the muscles and everything around it and underneath it. And it reminds me a lot of Dalton. I'm sure you know Dalton.
I love Dalton. That's my brother. For sure.
I fucking love that guy. And, you know, he hasn't had skin surgery yet.
Right.
And everybody's wondering, like, when is it going to be?
Yeah.
And it's kind of funny because I was with him in the beginning where he could just, like, he would pull it and you could just
pull it up. Yeah.
Pull it up and you see all the abs under. He has fucking abs upon abs underneath that shit. And it was just, it's so cool to watch guys own their body and be like, hey man, because we look to you guys, even as women, I look to men as a, as like reassurance that like, and so like when you guys do these things, it's like, you're making it one, okay, for all the other men to do it. And then it's making me feel like as a woman that I can do it because if men are doing that, they're not going to make fun of women for doing it.
Right, right.
Like that's where my brain goes because like I have an older brother. We're only 3 years apart and I have a younger brother. So I know what it's like to be picked on by brothers. I know what it's like to like have people make fun of you and have these different ideas, even though if it's just plain, You still feel it. And so I've always looked to guys as reassurance. It's like, okay, well, if you're doing it, then I can do it.
Yeah.
And if you can do it, then you're not going to make fun of me for doing it either.
Absolutely not. You know? That's right.
So if our skin's hanging, you guys are cheering. You guys are fucking out there so excited. And it's so helpful for our mindset of wanting to do these things because we're like, okay, look, someone else did it. They're excited about it. Everyone else is excited for him for that. So it's like, no one's going to make fun of you for your loose skin.
And that's why I did it. Cause I'm like, you know what? I could wait till I get the more polished look, but I wanted to show the world that even with the loose skin, I see my loose skin as a trophy that I won a battle that I killed a Goliath, if you will. Mm-hmm. That I made a change in my life. So when I hold up my skin, it's shown that I overcame something. I broke a generational curse in my family.
You did,
I broke the back of obesity. I don't have to worry about my daughter being obese. Like there are shifts and changes. So for me, it meant so much more. And then just the inspiration that came from that moment and being able to transfer that to other people. I have a client right now, his name is Mike, and he's going to RBT in just a few weeks. And just, you know, just watching him, his own experience, and just knowing that I was able to inspire other people to say, hey, I want to share my story. I want to, you know, be able to do that. So many people who are doing summer strength this year have reached out to me and, you know, just say, man, your story, your experience has been encouraging, you know, to me. And for me, that's the reason why I did it. I just want to show the world that, listen, you can do it. You don't have to be polished. You know, I might not ever have six packs. I'm trying to get them to be revealed, It's not about that for me. For me, it was about living. For me, it was just a fat dad who wanted to be around for his little girl, who wanted to be a healthy guy for his family, who wanted to be a healthy pastor, who wanted to inspire the world. And that's my MO.
You've done it.
I'm trying, girl, day by day.
You're not trying, you're doing. And I think that's the biggest deal is that, like, we talked about in the beginning a little bit of, like, we can have the desire all we want. Right. Yeah. But we have to put it in practice, and we actually have to try and do things for us to move forward. And they can be little tiny things, because at the end of the day, it's the big thing.
It
doesn't matter how you get there, as long as you get there. And for you, it's been amazing to see. And I think you being a pastor is a big deal, because you're right. I've gone into those churches, and yeah, like, it is deemed to be, you know, you're the tall, big, strong guy. And you're going to help us all, right? Like, that's what it's supposed to be. And now you're still showing you are a big, strong guy, but you don't have to be big anymore.
Nope.
You know?
Nope.
You're mentally strong. You're physically strong. You show up. Those are the things that matter. And so I think you have to think, too, like, you're changing the world in that life and showing other pastors, hey, you don't have to be the stereotype.
That's right.
Like you still can have the faith. You can still have the voice. You can still move people. You don't have to be 500 pounds. You know, my brother was 427 pounds. So like before he started his journey. So it's like, and he wanted to be a pastor for a very long time. So, and he went to school and everything.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's never too late.
It's never too late. It's never too late. And my niece is going right now for her to be a children's pastor.
Like beautiful.
All right. Like, and she starts that in the fall. So it's like super cool, right?
Yeah.
And it's all because of all of us around them too have been changing our lives and showing you don't have to be stuck.
That's right.
And I didn't even realize I was a role model for my nieces until they told me. They were like, wow, Melanie, like you're doing it. Like you give us hope that because, and it's kind of our family, like we're a big family too, to where we all get really big around puberty time. Right. Uh-huh. And then like we shoot up, we start getting taller, or Mel unfortunately never got taller. So I'm just I'm just straight 5'5", never moved. And so but like that's the thing is like you have to learn. Like I told my son, I was like, hey, I'm sorry, you have my genes. You can smell bread and you might gain some weight. So just you're going to have to be mindful as you get older, because you do have our genes and this is how you were set up. And unfortunately his dad's 5'4" and I'm 5'5". So I'm like, I'm just happy he's taller than us. And that's all. But it is, I just have to remember you're here for the people that are around you, and you can help inspire them, and you can help inspire more. And you have your coaching's license now.
Yes. Me starting this journey, I really wanted to be equipped to really help people, you know, in this era of fitness. You know, as I had a personal trainer, shout out to Charles, who helped me when I start, you know, my journey. I just really felt so inspired, you know, because I was getting so many questions about, you know, what do I do? How do I handle this? How do I handle that? And so I went back to school, you know, so I'm still a pastor to this day. So shout out to Grace Place Church. I still do that. But on the side now, we've launched My Purpose Fit. And so I became a master trainer. And so what that means, I have a nutrition coach. I'm a wellness coach. I do, you know, transformation, you know, coaching, helping people to kind of walk holistically, you know, through their transformation, because it's more than just going to the gym. It's more than just eating. It's holistically. We focus on five pillars. So I focus on mindset, nutrition, movement, exercise, lifestyle, because we always neglect that sometimes. Our lifestyle, our recovery, our rest, how we take care of ourselves. And then purpose. We have to have a why, a sense of purpose. And so those are what I focus on with my clients, to kind of help them on their journey, to give them a holistic perspective as it relates to weight loss. Because I tell people, when you lose weight, weight loss is not just the physical weight. It's the emotional weight. It's even the spiritual weight. It's so many different things that are coming off of you as the physical weight is coming off of you. And so you have to know how to maneuver that, how to kind of work through that and keep in balance and keep yourself in alignment, you know, as you go through that process, so you can, you know, get to the other side. And so that's what I focus on my clients with. Yeah.
I love that. Because I'm working on to be a life coach. So
Go ahead. Yes.
I'm doing it. And yes. I also kind of want to, I'm kind of leaning more towards where you guys have done too, is like learning all the nutrition, getting my certificate in that. Even like being a certified personal trainer, I would love to be that too. So that way
you will be awesome, Mel, for sure. Yes.
Yeah?
Yes. You'll be awesome, girl. You'll be awesome.
Yeah, I'm trying to get it all together because I get same thing. I get tons of questions all the time and I never want to give out wrong information.
Information, right. Exactly.
And so I go off of my experience. I tell them to talk to these doctors that I know.
Mm-hmm.
Like I'll be like, what's your email? We can like do like a full three-way string of emails to make sure you get this. I've gotten people surgeries before because they couldn't find anybody in their area. So it's like, I just want to be as knowledgeable as possible because it sucks being a fat person. I'm just going to be blunt about it. I was at 308 pounds. That was the toppest I've ever seen. And I know it's higher because, again, we all stop ourselves on.
We all stop weighing ourselves at some point. Yeah.
Not right? Mel could have been 320, 325. We don't know. But like, that's the deal is that like, I know how uncomfortable that is. I did that until I was 28. So it's like, I can think of it right now, just feeling sticky and icky and I hated it all the time. Just like, how are you wearing a sweater during the winter, during the summertime? I'm like,
always long sleeve shirt to the beach. A shirt like this, why it could be 95 degrees, everybody with their shirt off. I ain't taking off my shirt. I'm not doing that.
No, I'll sweat with it.
I don't care. We just dealt with it. You know, dealt with, you know, the ripping the pants, with me ripping the pants, splitting jeans. I mean, we're just so much stuff. And let's not even talk about the odors and all the other stuff that goes along with all the extra skin and all the other stuff that goes on, the rashes and all that. It's a whole system.
Like, for real. The smell thing too, because when I first started the podcast, people thought I was so goofy because I was like, have you ever smelled the inside of your belly button before? Like, it smells fucking weird. And they're just like, what, Mel? And I'm like, maybe it's a fat person thing. I don't know. But it's like,
we got a cavern to go into for our belly holes. A small person just got a little touch on the navel. It's different.
My whole finger can go in.
Exactly.
It's just like, no, like it smells different. Our skin is a little different. The folds
totally
are different.
Totally different experience.
So have you gotten I haven't watched, so I don't know. Have you gotten the rest of the plastic stuff?
No. So actually I'm about to start that journey this year. So I'm about to meet with my plastic surgeon. We're going to talk about our next steps to get the torso done. So working on the arms, the chest. And so we're going to focus, you know, on that. So that's the goal. I'm not doing any type of bodybuilding competition this year. I'm more of just supporting. I have some clients that are doing bodybuilding competitions, so I'll be there to coach them. But hopefully, God willing, next year, 2027, we'll be, you know, doing some bodybuilding competitions. I know JBL.
Yeah, I was going to say JB.
Yeah, JBY, excuse me. Yeah, so okay. I know, you know, so it's going to do that. And so there's definitely some opportunities there. And so we're going to, you know, see what 2027 holds for us.
Right.
This year is just more prepping, just continue to polish and build up so I can bring a better package, you know, next year.
I'm excited to see how it goes. Because that's the one thing we have to remember with plastics is that, like, when we do lose this amount of weight, it needs to go in stages. You're not going to be fixed in one stage.
It's not a one and done situation. No. It's not, unfortunately.
Unfortunately, like Dr. Beta's, you know, we do the Cutting Edge podcast on the side and it's all plastics. And he just wishes he could put that in people's heads of like, you know, because he only deals with extreme weight loss patients. So, and he's like, I specialize in it. I love it. He's like, but the deal is that your skin is different. And it's gonna, you know, it's been stretched out, it's been moved. And so when you go in, you're gonna need probably 2 to 3 stages, depending on how much you've lost. Mm-hmm. And he's like, I'm not trying to take your money. It's just like, I want you to have a good result.
Right.
And the only way to do that is, have 2 stages. He goes, you could go to someone and they will let you pay them whatever you want to pay them.
Right.
But you're not going to get the result that you want.
You're not going to get the best result. And that was something that I'm so grateful for my plastic surgeon. Shout out to Dr. Shafcott.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I'm grateful for him because, you know, again, I thought just chop it all off and we'll be one and done. He's like, Mr. Chadwick, if you want the best results, it's not going to go that way. you know, he said, we have to take it in stages. And so I'm grateful for the first surgery. I love what he's done for me for the first surgery. I'm going back to him again, you know, in a few weeks to continue, you know, that process. You know, I feel comfortable with him. And so I know it's going to be a great experience. And so, you know, even with that, you know, make sure you guys, you know, if you're looking in that route of plastic surgery, make sure you get a doctor that, you know, you can trust, you know, that you can choose, that will walk you through, not trying to just get some money out of you just to do a quick fix. Because my thing was, I don't want to like a botched job. No, I don't want to like Frankenstein. I know I'm going to have scars. That's normal. It's going to be extra skin. I wear my scars as badges, but I want to look like something. I want to look presentable. I want to be able to take off my shirt in comfort and know that it looks like something. And so I'm grateful that my doctor has had that experience with me so far.
I love that you have someone like that, because it's not that it's rare, but it's a lot less than what you would expect.
Exactly.
That's what I will say about plastic.
Exactly. Yeah, for sure.
And yes, for those that don't know what Just Be You is, it's a bariatric award show. Basically anybody on a weight loss journey, because I have a GLP-1 awards too. So,
all right.
But what we're doing the day before, me, Arthur, and Rob, is we're going to be putting on the first ever bariatric bodybuilding show.
Yes.
So, we are so stoked. We're getting things in line. I know we all need to get on a call to go over everything.
Right.
But that is in the works, guys. That is going to happen.
Yes, it is. It's going to be phenomenal.
As kind of a joke, but not a joke to you guys, you're going to perform on Friday, but you're not going to get that award for the bodybuilding until the next day at the award show. So, unfortunately, you will have to go 24 hours with not knowing, but that's okay. That's okay. That's the fun part. Exactly. That's the fun part and the anticipation. And I realize, oh, yeah, this is my show. I can do what I want. So guess what? The show's going to be earlier next year. You know, we don't have to wait till 7. Like, I think girl wants to go at 4. So,
all right. Let's do it.
You know, I want to start at 4. Let's get, you know, everything done. And let's have a great-ass party at the end.
Absolutely.
Know?
Absolutely.
So, and I know, Arthur, I'm sure you're going to be there. You better be there.
Yes, Arthur and Alberta.
I hope you bring your wife and your kid, if your kid can come, but definitely come on out. It's going to be a family affair. You guys are going to get to meet all 7 of my nieces and nephews.
All right.
We're in town now. So I'm like, all right, they're all coming.
Everyone's there.
Yeah. I'm like, get all dressed up, girls, because this is going to be so much fun. So, all right, the last thing I like to do, there's 2 questions I always ask at the end, is 1, your favorite non-scale victory.
Okay.
And then the second one is, what would you tell younger Arthur now that you know all the things?
Wow. My favorite non-scale victory. Ooh, there's a lot of them. I mean, I was able to go on an amusement park with my daughter last year for a 6th birthday. That was like a big one for me.
Yeah.
Recently, if I could give one, I was shopping at one of my local department stores, and they had some clothes that were on sale. Normally, again, 5 years ago, I couldn't shop at any type of department store. I had to order online. Shout out to King Size Men. Shout out to Casual Male. That was my spot. Okay. But I was able to pick up a pair of jeans and put them on. And voila, from a size 72 waist down to a size 36 waist, and just put it on and just like, wow, you know, from a size 7XL jacket to a size large jacket, just put it on and just like, oh, I'll just grab this and grab that. I'm just like, Arthur, do you remember that you couldn't even wear this, like any of this stuff? So those are like special moments for me that I'm like, wow, I'm grateful for my journey.
Yeah, because we know the scale will stop. So we got to celebrate these things.
Exactly.
Yeah.
In terms of, I'm asking that last question again, the second one.
What would you tell younger Arthur?
Tell younger Arthur? I would tell younger Arthur, life gets better. Like, don't focus on the small stuff. I think for me, I'm a person, I can look at all the little micro things and not see the big picture. And I think for me, I would tell myself, things get better. It's funny, when I was smaller, 300 pounds, I pictured that being in my head like 500 pounds. And so for me, it's just like, when I look at those pictures when I got mounted, like, you really weren't that big. You could have made a transition back then. You didn't have to go this far to come back this far. So I didn't realize, like, in my head, I thought was too far gone then to change. And that's why it just gradually just got worse. So I would tell myself, it's never too late to change. It's never too late to turn around. It's never too late. And that's why I call myself the restart coach, because I'm just like, listen, you can restart. I started at 40 years old. Like, I'm 47 now. Like, you can restart at any age or any stage in life and become the best version of yourselves. I don't care if you're old or young, you can make a shift and make a change in your life. So that's why I would tell the young life.
I love it because it's all facts, man. It does not matter how old you are, because like I see it all the time and I just try to send people, you know, little clips and videos of like, it doesn't matter. You can be 50 in your 60s and 70s.
Absolutely.
I know that Dr. Dovak and I believe Dr. Fridley have both done surgeries on people that are 70 plus.
Yeah.
You know, and they're living longer and that's
longer and healthy and the best version of themselves. Absolutely.
Right. And everybody in that age group, they're just like, I just wish I would have done it earlier. Because you, as a big person, we suffer. There are certain things that we suffer and you don't have to suffer your whole life. You know, you really don't. So make the change. If you're listening to this now and you've made it this long, this is meant for you and you need to make a change right now.
Absolutely. So this is your sign.
Yeah, this is your sign. So thank you again, Arthur. You are a blessing. And I love that you're here and you're with me and you're with all of us. So keep doing what you're doing. Keep inspiring. Never change that attitude. So thank you again, Arthur.
I have someone who wants to say hi to you. Come. I know she's been eavesdropping.
Look at
this daddy's little girl.
Oh, I love that. You have a great daddy there.
She said you have a great daddy there. What'd she say? Do you believe her? Yeah? Okay.
Yeah, awesome. Well, you guys know the drill. You got to get that water in, protein, movement.
That's right. Water, sleep. Protein, movement. That's it.
That's right. Get those vitamins. The last thing is you got to get those vitamins in, okay?
Got to get those vitamins.
I literally have a code OSLP. It's 15% off. I have gone away from ProCare just to see if there's anything else out there. And guys, I'm back. When I've been back, I've been back since like December because nothing beats them to me. So go check it out. Do your thing. And last but not least, don't be an asshole to one another.
That's
have a great week, man. Have a great week. Let us know if you need anything.